Hey, I'm Zale, host of Preconceived, a podcast that challenges the preconceptions that shape how we view the world. Preconceived examines both our approach to major life choices, but also our perspectives on issues to which we may have been overly conditioned towards certain opinions. Each episode features a different topic, with experts, researchers, and luminaries in their respective fields. We think you will especially enjoy recent episodes on polyamory, regretting parenthood, dopamine nation, and myths of the beauty industry. Find Preconceived wherever you get your podcasts.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. Welcome back.
Okay.
Wow.
We are so excited to put this out. You know, when Bridie and I started this show, we had like a small list of dream guests to have on the show. And one of those guests was the guest that we had today, Cindy Gallup, who, if you're not familiar with the work that she does, well, you're about to be. And Cindy is the brains behind Make Love Not Porn, which... again,
was the topic of our very first Turn Me On podcast episode back in 2017.
And all these years later, we finally got to sit down and chat with her, and it was fucking awesome.
So many different doors in my mind were opened by that conversation. And we usually talk about sex, obviously, but there was just so many more things to dive into with Cindy.
Yeah, the state of porn, the future of porn, the future of AI and women in tech. We go into it all. So please buckle up, enjoy, and follow, of course,
and go and check her out.
Check out the show notes; all the links are there. And enjoy our conversation with our new friend Cindy Gallup, and we'll see you all on the other side. I'm so excited. Today we are joined by Cindy Gallup, a trailblazer whose mission has disrupted not just the advertising world, but also how we view and talk about sex. A graduate of Somerville College, Oxford, with over three decades in brand building, marketing, and advertising, Cindy founded Make Love, Not Porn.
Big fans.
Big fans. And I mean, we'll talk about why we're big fans after, but known for her TED Talk that sparked the social sex revolution, Cindy is raising the world's first sex tech fund, All the Sky Holdings. Business Insider has celebrated her as the top marketing strategy thinker and influential tech woman on Twitter. And as an advocate for diversity and inclusion, Cindy challenges ageism and champions equal pay, embodying the spirit of innovation and disruption. And I cannot begin to express how excited we are to have you here with us today. And the reason for that, Cindy, is because you may or may not know this, but we've been doing this podcast for
7 years,
just over 7 years. And our very first episode that we ever produced, published, was about Make Love, Not Porn. And we are absolutely, yeah. And so this is like, I'm just absolutely beyond excited to be able to speak to the person behind it all. Really amazing.
Oh my God, I am thrilled to hear that. And I have to go back and listen to that episode. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's it's something that we've kind of come back to time and time and time again over the course of recording this podcast. And I guess, you know, just to kick all of this off, I'll probably ask you the question that's been asked probably a trillion times before, but I'm just so curious. How does one who is, you know, starts off in the world of marketing and business find their way into the world of porn, but not just porn with an extraordinarily important message
I'm going to interrupt you. Not porn, social sex.
Fuck yeah, there we go. I knew it. And that's it. Wrap. Cut it up. Let's put it out. I love it. I love that. How did that come to be?
Sure. So the answer, honestly, is by complete and total accident. And by the way, everything in my life and career has always happened by accident. I've never consciously, intentionally planned anything. My ex-boss, John Hegarty, the creative director of BBH, the ad agency I used to work for, has a wonderful mantra. He says, do interesting things and interesting things will happen to you. Mm-hmm. And that's very much how I like to live my life. Hmm. And so, you know, Make Love, Not Porn was an accident, but that's interesting in itself because it is literally the startup the world asked for. And what I mean by that is I date younger men. They tend to be in their 20s. And about 16, 17 years ago, I began realizing through dating younger men that I was encountering an issue that would never have crossed my mind if I had not encountered it so very intimately and personally. I realized that I was experiencing what happens when two things converge. And I stress the dual convergence because most people think it's only one thing. I realized I was experiencing what happens when today's total freedom of access to hardcore porn online meets our society's equally total reluctance to talk openly and honestly about sex. It's when those two factors converge that porn becomes sex education by default in not a good way. So I found myself encountering a number of sexual behavioral memes in bed. I went, whoa, I know where that behavior is coming from. I thought, gosh, if I'm experiencing this, other people must be as well. I didn't know that because 16 years ago, nobody was talking about this. Nobody was writing about it. This was me in isolation as a naturally action-oriented person going, I'm going to do something about this. So 15 years ago, purely as a side venture, you know, I put up on no money a tiny clunky website at makelovenotporn.com that was originally kind of a public service announcement. The construct was porn world versus real world. Here's what happens in the porn world. Here's what really happens in the real world. Hmm. I launched a TED. I became the only TED speaker to say the words come on my face on the TED stage six times in succession. The talk went viral as a result. And it drove this extraordinary global response to my tiny website that I had never anticipated. Thousands of people wrote to me from all around the world, young and old, male and female, straight and gay, pouring their hearts out, telling me things about their sex lives and their porn watching habits they'd never told anyone before. And I realized I'd uncovered a huge global social issue. And so that was the point at which I went, oh my God, I now have a personal responsibility. I have to take Make Love Not Porn forwards in a way that will make it much more far-reaching, helpful, and effective. And so I turned it into a business designed to do good and make money simultaneously, which, by the way, is what I believe the future of all business should be. And so today, Make Love Not Porn is the world's first and only user-generated, 100% human-curated social sex video sharing platform. So we're kind of what Facebook would be if it allowed you to openly, healthily, socially, sexually self-express, which it clearly does not. The way to think about us is, if porn is the Hollywood blockbuster movie, you know, produced performative entertainment, Make Love Not Porn is the badly needed documentary. Mm. We are a unique window onto the funny, messy, loving, wonderful sex we all have in the real world. And what we're doing is we are socializing, normalizing, and destigmatizing sex, bringing it out of the shadows into the sunlight to promote consent, communication, good sexual values and behavior. We are literally sex education through real world demonstration.
Oh, that's so refreshing.
I love it. Yeah. It's, it, and it's something that has like, that has, I mean, you've truly had an impact. I mean, you've had an impact on us. You've had an impact on the way that we view porn. You've had an impact on so many of our guests over the years who have brought up Make Love Not Porn. And I'm just, you know, again, like that was almost a, not quite, but like almost a decade ago. And I'm just so, so happy to see that it's still running strong, still doing its thing. You know, again, like you tapped into something that was very evident, that it was something that was needed. I mean, I can't even imagine the amount of change that it has played a role in contributing to when it comes to the ways that we talk or think about porn. You know, I've never thought about this until right now, but like, when I think of things like OnlyFans, I think, I wonder how much of Make Love Not Porn perhaps like planted a seed, whether that's conscious or subconscious, you know, like could that have been one of the seeds that has led us to where we are now with just the ways in which we view sex work, although not the ways that which we should be viewing sex work currently, but you know, there's lots of work to be done, but we look at sex work typically right now a hell of a lot different than we did 10 years ago. And, you know, I feel like Make Love Not Porn probably played a pretty significant role in that, whether people see it that way or not. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Like, you know, since the inception of it, like how has the sex work industry shifted since the first days of Make Love Not Porn? And do you see it that way? Like, do you see Make Love Not Porn sort of playing a role in having any kind of effect in that?
Well, you know, I mean, first of all, I will just say that, you know, Make Love Not Porn is not a sex work platform in the conventional sense, because we are for everyday people to share their real world sex lives. But, you know, it's very interesting you say that, because, you know, I foresaw the creator economy 15 years ago when I concepted Make Love Not Porn's revenue sharing business model to democratize access to income. So our members pay to subscribe, rent, and stream social sex videos. Half the income goes to our contributors, whom we call our Make Love Not Porn stars. And when we launched 11 years ago, I wrote a blog post introducing our business model. And I titled it, How Make Love Not Porn Can Help the Global Economy. And I began that post by saying, you know, all those little scam ads that pop up on the internet all the time going, make $2,000 a week working from home. Well, now you can. And in that post, I said, you know, my vision, and this is still the case, you know, my vision is that one day, Make Love Not Porn hits the kind of critical mass where your social sex video could get 1 million rentals at $5 per rental, and we give you half that income. Now, we're a very long way away from that, unfortunately, because it is just worth highlighting, you know, you're absolutely right. The biggest thing we have to celebrate is that we're still here. And that's because the one thing I did not realize when I embarked on this venture was that I and my tiny team would fight an enormous battle every single day, not even to grow Make Love Not Porn, just to keep it operational. Basically, because every piece of business infrastructure any other tech startup takes for granted, we can't. The small print always says no adult content. And that's all pervasive. You know, can't get funded, couldn't get banked. It took me 4 years to find one bank here in America that would allow me to open a business bank account for Make Love Not Porn. Try doing business for 4 years without a business bank account. Can't tell you how I did it. Did it in ways I shouldn't have. It makes life extraordinarily difficult. Every tech service I need to use for a video platform, hosting, encoding, encrypting, the terms of service always say no adult content. In every case, I have to go to the people at the top of the company, explain what I'm doing, beg to be allowed to use their service. Sometimes they let me, sometimes they don't. It's a very labor-intensive process, and we never get to work with best-in-class of anything. Mm-hmm. My two biggest business growth inhibitors are, number one, payments. PayPal won't work with adult. Stripe won't. Mainstream credit card processors won't. I have to work with the murky subculture of adult-friendly payment processors, who, because anybody adult has nowhere else to go, charge extortionate fees. I pay out 12% of my revenue every month in payment processing fees alone versus mainstream rates of 3% or less. My second biggest business growth inhibitor is that we are banned from advertising Make Love Not Porn anywhere. We cannot advertise on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, I ask you, by the way, Reddit, I ask you, you know, Google, Snapchat, TikTok, YouTube. And this is so frustrating because, you know, for example, we are banned from doing paid search ads on Google. But every day, all around the world, people search for Make Love Not Porn without knowing that we exist. And what I mean by that is the top organic search terms that send traffic to us are Make Love Not Porn, Video Sexo Na Porno, Make Love Not Porn, where they don't know there's a company called that. One young man told me that he found us when he Googled porn that is not porn. He was so fed up with everything out there, wanted something different, had no idea what to search for. When you search porn that is not porn, you find Make Love Not Porn. That is how much the world wants us and knows it needs us.
Wow. I mean, you know, one of the first things that came to my mind when you were explaining all that, it seems like there's a real gap in the payment platforms that could be filled and be pretty lucrative without gouging. You know, like, I just feel like if you opened it up to everybody and just allowed your platform to do it just reasonable.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that is why for years I've been saying I want to build the Stripe of sex tech. Because the first payment processor, to your point, that welcomes legal, ethical, transparent ventures like mine cleans up. And the thing about building the Stripe of sex tech is that the challenge is not the technology, which is the easy part. It's finding a bank to underwrite it. And I have to tell you, you know, if you had told me 15 years ago that I would spend this much of my life talking to banks and payment processors, I wouldn't have believed you. Mm. 15 years ago, when I was first coming up against these barriers, somebody said to me, Cindy, to do what you want to do, you're going to have to start your own bank. And I was so angry about the challenges. I went, right, I'm going to start my own bank. And so I literally investigated starting my own bank, which is when I discovered it's impossible. You know, the legislation makes it impossible. But I've been looking for and talking to banks ever since. And the good news is that today in 2024, I finally found two banks, both not coincidentally women-led, who are interested in potentially partnering on a pilot for the Stripe of sex tech. I just have to raise the funding to be able to build it. But you're absolutely right, because, you know, my team can tell you that, you know, I've talked to them regularly at our weekly team meetings about the fact that, you know, one day, you know, I would love to buy a bank, you know, and these days that's a lot easier than you would have thought, in order to be able to build and operate the Stripe of sex tech. And I've said to them, if I ever get to buy a bank, I will open that bank up to every sex worker who cannot get banked anywhere else, and we will prove how much goddamn revenue that generates when you allow people who are operating entirely legally to bank with you.
Oh my goodness! I cannot wait till the day that I get to open up a checkings account through the bank that Cindy opened up.
Oh, yeah.
We live in hope.
Wow. That's quite, so no kidding, uphill battle every single day. Why, like, it takes a specific type of trait in someone to keep on going with that. What drives you and makes you so motivated to keep going up against those barriers?
So two things. The first is, it's very fortunate that the single thing that most motivates me is the dynamic that I characterize as, I'm going to fucking well show you. Mm. You tell me it can't be done, I'm going to fucking well show you. You put an obstacle in my path, I'm going to fucking well show you. I take all of that daily demoralization, discouragement, and depression and channel it into motivation and inspiration. And the second thing that keeps me going is, you know, every day for the past 11 years, our community at Make Love Not Porn has written to us, demonstrating that as a unique business, we have this unique ability to change people's sexual attitudes and behavior for the better in a way that nothing else can. Mm. So over 11 years, we've taught countless young people that porn is not sex in the real world. You know, Gen Z loves us. We've saved numerous marriages and relationships. That is literally how people write to us. You saved my marriage. You saved my relationship. We've inspired communications breakthroughs within couples. Parents who are members of our community tell us that just being part of Make Love Not Porn has made them feel able to be more open and educate about sex with their children. And in fact, parents buy their teenage and 20-something children subscriptions to Make Love Not Porn because they tell us, I want my kids to see what happy, healthy, loving sex relationships look like.
Wow.
And as with any disruptive technology, use cases emerge the founder never dreamt of. So I was blown away when we first began hearing from survivors of rape and sexual assault. We hear from female survivors, male, trans, non-binary survivors. They tell us that Make Love Not Porn helped them reclaim their bodies. We help them feel able to be sexual again in a scenario where porn is too triggering. And it's not just people who watch our videos. We have a number of Make Love Not Porn stars who've told us that being able to share themselves sexually in a completely safe and trustworthy space has helped them process and heal from sexual trauma, which is amazing. And I'll tell you something really interesting. We designed Make Love Not Porn to be fully diverse and inclusive, and it is. You know, our members, our Make Love Not Porn stars, are all ages, you know, male, female, trans, non-binary, straight, LGBTQ, asexual, all races, ethnicities. We're a global platform. But over the past 11 years, we've observed that Make Love Not Porn is especially a revelation to men. More men send us grateful emails, leave appreciative comments than anybody else, because we are something unique that men will find nowhere else on the internet, which is a safe space where men can be and watch other men being open, emotional, and vulnerable around sex. You would not believe the number of men who write to us regularly and say, I just watched my first video on Make Love Not Porn, and afterwards I cried. I've said for years, I wish society understood the opposite of what it thinks is true. Women enjoy sex just as much as men, and men are just as romantic as women. Yet neither gender is allowed to openly celebrate either fact. We'd all be so much better off if they were. I picked up a wonderful Twitter exchange a while back between two men. The first man had tweeted, as a joke, obviously, he tweeted, hey guys, got this really weird fetish. I've got this kink where I want to watch porn where people are honest, loving, loyal, decent, and really like each other. Hit me up with your hottest links, please. And another man replied and said, there's this website called Make Love Not Porn where you can watch real couples fucking and making love. He said, I watched a video where the woman said to her man, I love you, while they're making love. He said sincerely, I cried when I heard that. Make Love Not Porn is one of the solutions to toxic masculinity.
Turn Me On Podcast will be back after this short break.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile.
From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I have goosebumps.
I love this. This is so great. To our listeners that have been with us for quite a while, we love Make Love Not Porn. But to anybody who is new listening, well, now you know, and now I'm sure you are starting to feel the same feelings that we have had for the last 7 or 8 years. I'd love to take a moment and just kind of shift gears a little bit here, because something that I am very quickly starting to realize about you, Cindy, is that, and you sort of mentioned it there, but like, you are a disruptor. You are someone who is clearly very invested and passionate about shaking shit up. And I know that you recently were featured or wrote an article for Fast Company regarding AI and women. Now, I probably should have asked Bridie for permission as to whether or not we could go down the AI route during this conversation prior to, because I know that if I start on AI, it's like just giving an ear beating and not everybody's up for it. But I'm so fascinated to hear your take, because here's the thing. To those folks out there who feel like they are in for an ear beating, the one thing that I do feel very strong about right now is that AI is coming. Well, it's here, and it is coming closer and closer to a point where it is, I feel like it pretty confidently, that it is going to fundamentally change the way that we know what life is. Not to the degree of oh, we're going to see the world change the way that the internet changed the world. I'm talking like this has the potential to be the type of change that that humanity saw when we discovered how to create fire. It has the ability to fundamentally uproot and completely overhaul anything that we think we know about what it means to live. And that could be, you could look at that as like the utopian version. You could look at that as the dystopian version. I think it's probably somewhere in the middle. But one thing that you spoke about in this article is how women can play a very important role in ensuring that AI does things that that we need it to do to see it thrive and to see it work for us as a human race. So speaking to that, and speaking to the fact that you're a disruptor and looking at this thing, this tech that is going to disrupt in very big ways, for better or for worse, what, first of all, like, what is the thing that motivated you to write about the role of women in AI's future?
Sure. So I'm going to contextualize my response in the broader tech landscape as a whole, because, and this is a point I've made for a long time, and I think not enough people really think about it like this. The young white male founders of the giant tech platforms that dominate all our lives today, they are not the primary targets, online or offline, of harassment, abuse, sexual assault, racism, violence, rape, revenge porn. Therefore, they did not and they do not proactively design for the prevention of any of those things on their platforms. And we see the results of that around us every single day. Those of us who are most at risk every single day, women, Black people, people of color, LGBTQ, people with disabilities, we design safe spaces and safe experiences, but we don't get funded. Only 1.7% of all venture capital last year went to female founders. And that is why we have still not yet seen what the future of the internet could be when it's designed and built through the female lens. And to use my own example, I designed Make Love Not Porn through the female lens to be the safest place on the internet, because I designed it around what everybody else should have, nobody else did, human curation. There is no self-publishing of anything on Make Love Not Porn. Our curators watch every frame of every video from beginning to end before we approve or reject and we publish it. No one else does that. We review every post on every member profile. And by the way, on Make Love Not Porn, your posts can be as safe work or not safe work as you like, but we review them. We approve or reject and we publish them. No one else does that. We review every comment on every video before we approve or reject and publish it. No one else does that. We can vouch for every single piece of content on our platform in a way that nobody else can. And the important point about this is we are tiny bootstrapping, have no money, and we've human curated everything for 11 years. Imagine what Facebook, TikTok, et al. Could do with their billions if they chose to. Safety on the internet is not a matter of viability. It's a matter of will. And so to bring this home to AI, you know, when we look at the AI landscape at the moment, this is exactly the syndrome that's playing out. You know, a closed loop of white guys funding white guys who go on to fund other white guys. AI built through the white male lens with no concern for the risks that all the rest of us face, which is why we have the explosion of deep fake porn that's happening currently. Mm-hmm. And so the answer to the future of AI and the future of humanity, given the context you've put it in, is quite frankly very simple: fund female founders. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you again my own example. I have had, you know, a Make Love Not Porn AI product in the pipeline for 5 years, because that's how long ago I came up with this idea. You haven't seen it yet because I can't get it funded. You know, I mean, I can't get my entire product roadmap funded, which is what I'm constantly trying to do. But this is an example of the female lens on AI. You know, in the same way that, you know, AI depends on large language models, I have something very unique at Make Love Not Porn. I have an LVM, a large video model, that is the world's only pool of fully human-curated consensual real-world sex. Mm-hmm. And I want to use that large video model to build an algorithm for consent with a ton of use cases. So, you know, for example, Hollywood. And I say that because, and again, this is something I've talked about for years, because it's absolutely correlated to what we do at Make Love Not Porn. We are surrounded in popular culture, you know, movies, videos, streaming, music videos, with many depictions of purportedly consensual sex that model non-consensual behavior. You know, whether it's Game of Thrones, where you can't have sex if it's not rape, pretty much, you know, or whether it's, you know, Hollywood movies, where it's purportedly a fully consensual real world sex scene, but there is zero foreplay, no asking for permission of anything, instant orgasm, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So imagine being able to run your script for an algorithm or a sex scene for an algorithm that tells you whether or not what you are putting out into the world is fully consensual. Or another use case, criminal court. Because as I think we all know, something like, you know, 5% of rape cases ever make it into the judicial system. 0.001% ever result in convictions. Rape is the only crime where the onus is entirely on the victim to prove it happened. You know, imagine being able to counter that he said, she said with an algorithm that demonstrates whether or not what took place was consensual, even if it doesn't conform to the old world order legislation, you know, as to what that may be. et cetera, et cetera. That is AI through the female lens. In the same way, by the way, that other women in AI are looking at building solutions to deepfake porn. And so the Fast Company op-ed you allude to was me really trying to get, the AI white bros who dominate all the funding and all the discourse at the moment. I was trying to talk to them in their own language, which is quite frankly the language of capitalism. And so my piece was headed three reasons why the future of AI depends on women. And reason number one is, as I've laid out, we build safe technology. Mm. We build safe AI experiences. Reason number two is the female lens finds deployments for AI that are completely different and extremely beneficial to society. In addition to my own example, female founders are, building AI that helps, agriculture, that helps health, et cetera, et cetera. And thirdly, when you put those two together, that is the approach to AI that is going to make an absolute goddamn fucking shit ton of money.
Mm.
And by the way, you cannot make money out of AI when you exclude 50% of the population from it.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me a lot of, two different discussions that I've talked about at length on, both this show and my other show, Sick Boy. But like for example, research pertaining to women's health, right? Since the dawn of health research, women have just not been the focus. Even down to the sex of the mice that they're using to test drugs. Mm. And so what does that result in? Well, it results in medications that are being made for, let's say, cardiovascular health issues. And those medicines come out, but those medicines are based on the male body. Female bodies are completely different than the male body. And as it turns out, the medications that would be required to aid a woman in some sort of cardiovascular issue, well, because the meds were tested on male rats and not, did not have any sort of female lens put to it at all, those medications are not nearly as effective as they could be for women. Or, and so what happens if we shifted that? Well, it's not only is it going to provide a better service and product for women, but it's also going to have trickle-down effects that's going to affect not just women, everybody. And the same can be said for like accessibility, right? You look at accessibility issues. Well, I can tell you right now, if you can think of five pieces of accessibility that have been implemented throughout history that are just a part of our infrastructure that we take for granted every day, every single one of them, we do not think of as accessibility important for just someone who is a wheelchair user. The example would be like that little ramp at the, at intersections when you are crossing the street. Well, that is a piece of accessibility for somebody who unfortunately cannot walk and has to use a wheelchair to get up and, onto the sidewalk or down onto the road. Well, it's also extraordinarily convenient for my friend Taylor here, who has two infants that he needs to, take around town, one in a stroller, one walking around. And it's like that piece of accessibility that has been made benefits all of us, not just the people that it's focused for. And your point there about like safety, I mean, that's, that in big part is kind of what I was talking about earlier in terms of the way we're about to see a really big change. And safety is obviously a huge issue when it comes to AI, because if it's not done safely, then it could result in a really scary reality. And I just, I think you are the coolest lady. Like, you are just the coolest lady. I love the way your mind works. Do you have any solid examples? Speaking of women in AI, do you have any like solid examples of women who have led AI innovations that have like really, already have started to make a significant impact?
I don't, because unfortunately, exactly the same scenario on the funding front applies to female AI founders.
Right, yeah.
Literally, as I mentioned, only 1.7% of all venture capital last year went to female founders. Something like you know, I think it's less than 1% of all AI funding goes to female founders. So no, this is why, again, I say, until we start funding female founders, we will not have the opportunity to see what the future of technology can be when it's designed and built through the female lens at scale.
One thing that I am curious about, you know, as artists, Brady and I, you know, we went to theater school together. Most of our friends are in the arts. You know, a lot of friends that are musicians, a lot of friends that are writers, a lot of friends that are graphic designers. And one of the conversations that I tend to hear quite a lot, especially in that circle, those circles, is like the fear of AI, you know, destroying their industry or destroying their ability to create their art. And I, you know, as much as I see where they're coming from, I think it's not so black and white. And it's really hard to tell, especially right now. But from your standpoint, someone who has been so heavily involved in, you know, porn and online sex, how do you see AI kind of playing a role? I mean, obviously the deepfake thing is a huge issue. But more so, I'm kind of curious about your thoughts on how you could see AI kind of improving or adding to porn and the way that people view sex, or, you know, receive even the ways that they feel or think or learn about sex when it comes to AI and the way that it, you know, the way that it's sort of, it's obviously going to have its hands in everything. So how do you see this in the world of sex and porn online?
Well, let me answer that question more broadly first, because, you know, I'm very much with some of my friends, both in the arts world and in advertising. So my friend Natalie Diggins has a wonderful project at thearts.ai, which I encourage you to check out, because Natalie is an engineer by background, but she is passionate about the arts and supports them in all sorts of ways. And she created thearts.ai to basically demonstrate to communities in the arts that AI can be a very, you know, in a way, you know, a very practical assistance to absolutely maximizing their creativity. And she's created this series of guides across a range of different artistic arenas, theatre, jazz musicians, you know, photography. And it's, she's just at the start of this. But she feels very strongly about demonstrating how, you know, deploying AI together with your own creativity can actually help you and help make you more money. And then in the advertising world, you know, because obviously this is very much debated there as well, you know, I'm with a number of my creative friends who again believe that in terms of what we do, and I completely agree with this, there is no substitute for human creativity, but there are things that AI can absolutely help, you know, shortcut or accelerate. And, you know, I would refer our listeners to my friend Ray Inamoto, who is a creative in advertising. He has a Substack where he posts a lot of his own perspectives on how AI can be married with creativity to absolutely not in any way substitute for anything, but actually help power what we do anyway. You know, for your question specifically, I have no view on AI and porn per se, because as far as I'm concerned, you know, I'm all about using technology to make good things happen in the real world. And so, you know, the Make Love Not Porn AI product, the algorithm for consent that I shared with you, you know, I think, you know, that is the most important thing that I could possibly build if I can get the funding to do this. And unfortunately, you know, that ain't cheap, by the way, getting, you know, AI engineers and so on. But what I will say is that, you know, I hope I demonstrated when I talked about my AI product how very differently the female lens looks at deployment of AI.
Totally.
At the moment, when people think about AI in a porn context, it's, you know, AI generated porn. And I just think it's much more interesting to think about, you know, again, how could you deploy AI together with creativity to do something very different than no one's expecting? And I don't see anybody thinking like that.
Mm-hmm. Man, yeah, wow, fascinating. One thing I was having a conversation with a surgeon the other day, and he's big on, he's like a big robotics orthopedic surgeon here in Halifax. And I asked him how, and he's, you know, he's very in tune with the whole AI thing right now. And I said, what are your thoughts on, do you think AI will ever replace your job? Or do you think AI will ever, you know, make what you do sort of, especially from the robotics side? And he was like, no, I don't think that. But what I do feel is that the surgeons that utilize AI will replace the surgeons that don't. And I was like, man, that's a really smart way of looking at it, because and you could apply that sort of sentiment to any ways in which AI is going to be a part of your industry. And I really love that. Because the reality of it is that it's not going to, it, like, we can't stop this. You know, the train left the station a long time ago. And so it's just a matter of whether or not you accept it and find ways to allow it to boost your ability to express yourself or to, you know, be productive or to thrive in your industry or whatever, or not. And yeah. Okay. I'm going to step off the AI train now.
No, I love it. And it's because I feel like someone who avoids a lot of tech talk when it comes to just like what the content that I consume personally, because I think for some reason, I just assume it's like over my head. Like, I'm not a techie person. I tell myself. And so, but it, because of our connection and your interest in it and the way that you speak about it, is, it's like, it's kind of engaging in terms of, you know, the future, and it's here, it's now, it's happening. And
somebody write that down, Brad. I can't believe you just said that. That's amazing. Thank you.
No, thank you so much. I need someone to take me along.
I want to pick up on that point, because so I spoke at a women's conference in the ad industry here in New York a few weeks ago. And there was a panel about AI. There's a panel about AI at every conference these days, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
And on this panel was my dear friend, Joanna Peña-Bickley, who is an engineer by background, AI, machine learning, used to work at IBM. And now she started her own company, Vibes AI, which is actually working on producing AI hardware and wearables that are how you access, you know, how you use AI in your daily lives. But I'm telling you this because, so she was on a panel with a very nice guy who is an academic, and I've actually, I can't remember his name offhand, who also specialized in AI. And so he was very keen to assure the audience, which was predominantly women, that you didn't need to understand how AI worked to be able to use it. So he was being very reassuring about that and saying, and anyway, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, I just want to reassure you, you don't have to learn about AI to be able to use it. And Joanna went, you're wrong. Okay, went, you know. And she said to the audience, let me tell you, yes, you do need to learn how AI works. You need to understand AI, because then you will make more money. And what I loved about what she said was she went on to demonstrate what she meant with her own salary figures. So she said, you know, I start off in marketing and, you know, and worked in various roles for a number of years. And, you know, my salary kind of never exceeded a ceiling of about $300,000. Then I began, you know, working on AI, understanding AI, and my salary went up to $500,000. And, you know, now I am, you know, an expert, and I'm hired into those roles. And, you know, that was when I started making over $1 million a year. And she said, so I am telling you, you know, you need to understand how AI works, because then you will make more money. And I bloody love that.
Absolutely. And like, I've been also kind of recently listening to more, you know, business stuff and like things that feel outside of sort of my comfort zone. You know, I've thought of myself as an artist for a lot of years. Now I'm a massage therapist. I keep ending up in these positions where I'm an independent contractor or I own my own business and it's me and I do all of this stuff. And as a 40-year-old woman, I feel that I haven't brought along with me in that trajectory any sort of sense of like my financial well-being and like how to be a moneymaker. And so these are all new things that I'm trying to educate myself in and empower myself in now. And it makes me so happy to hear something like that, because it is also easy to just go, well, I don't think I'm naturally skilled in that. So I'm just going to look the other way and hope that my male partner will take me along for the ride and will help me make sure that I'm financially secure and will make sure I know all the things I need to know about tech. And it's not very empowering to go through life like that, because it actually inhibits your ability to make choice about the people that you spend your time with. Mm. Because I need someone else to make my dreams come true that way. And just a little tangent on how.
No, abso-bloody-lutely. And in that context, I would suggest, both to you and our listeners. So I have a Substack called Dear Cindy. And I have a Substack because, first of all, as you can imagine, in 15 years of Make Love Not Porn, I've had so many requests for sex advice because people didn't know where else to go. But also, over the years, people have asked me a ton of things that I can't always respond to on social media or whatever. And so at Dear Cindy, I invite people to ask me anything. And every week I answer a different question. And a lot of those questions are about making money, especially for women. And so do check out, you and our audience, do check out Dear Cindy on Substack, because I answer questions like, how do I get paid to speak? How do I negotiate getting paid what I'm worth, et cetera? So hopefully that can be helpful to you and anybody else who would like to just, explore different ways of operating in this context.
I'm definitely going to check that out. Thank you.
I know it's not proper. I know you're not supposed to ask, but just out of my own curiosity, and we can bleep it out if this is.
This is going to be one of two questions that I can think of, maybe three.
You can ask me anything. I hope you know that.
What's your favorite thing to put up your ass? How old are you?
Oh my God, I'm 64. And I tell people how old I am all the time.
Hell yeah.
My age from the rooftops.
Good.
Because, My philosophy is the complete opposite of the one where people try and counter ageism by going, oh, age is just a number. It's not. Your age is a very special number because your age is the sum total of you.
Yes.
Your age is the total of all of your lived experience to date, all of your expertise, all of your learnings. Your age is an expression of your value. And so I coined the hashtag years ago, say your age. And I encourage everyone to do that. So I'm 64, loud and proud.
Hell yeah. Okay. I love that. And the reason I asked is because, it provides some context to our listeners that are just listening and don't see you. But you've obviously lived an incredibly fascinating life. You've made a lot of change. You've made, big waves in seemingly everything that you've kind of put yourself out there to kind of have your hands involved in. What do you wish you had known earlier about how your experiences have shaped your path?
Do you know, I'm occasionally asked if I have any regrets about my past career life, and I don't, but I have to say the one thing that I would have liked to have done is started working for myself a damn sight sooner. Because, my generation grew up with, what you do is you go to a good university, you get a good degree, then you get a good job. Entrepreneurialism was not a thing back then. And I really wish it had been, because, you know, I was 45 when I left the corporate world, and I am now evangelical about working for yourself, because too many people make the mistake of thinking that a job is the safe option. It's not. Because in a job, you are at the complete mercy of management changes, industry downturns, marketplace dynamics. I say to people, whose hands would you rather place your future in? Those of a large corporate entity, but at the end of the day, doesn't give a shit about you, or somebody who will always have your best interests at heart, i.e. you.
Ugh, I love that. Cindy, before we wrap up, it's been such a treasure, this conversation. I want to ask you a question that's inspired by Esther Perel. You probably know.
An old friend of mine, by the way.
Of course.
It's so funny. It's so funny. Literally, Cindy, like our two sort of like
our dream
two
list.
Dream guests are literally you and Esther Perel. So like we are checking one huge box today. Very fitting question, Brady.
She asked the question, and I'm paraphrasing here, but in her TED Talk, what do you do to turn yourself on? Which I just love as a question, mm-hmm. Because it could be very, it could be interpreted in lots of different ways. So I was just thinking that let's ask you that question. We've dabbled in a lot of the stuff that you do that's out in the world. And I would love to hear just a little, some personal context about Cindy Gallup. What do you do to turn yourself on?
Honestly, you know, I think my answer to that would be what I do with everything else, which is, you know, I don't give a damn what anybody thinks. And the reason I respond with that is because, you know, I don't consciously think about turning myself on, because I'm lucky enough to be in a position where I can do whatever the hell I want. And I don't care what anybody else thinks. And I think that's a very good framework for getting turned on. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because I think a lot of people answer, you know, it's like when I'm doing this very specific thing that I feel powerful in, but that's a powerful way to live. So
most times when people are doing that thing is the time where you feel, I don't fucking care what anybody thinks.
Yeah.
This feels great.
Exactly.
You know, and that's it. Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
Thank you.
Cindy, I it's very clear. I've been gushing this entire time. We are massive fans of everything that you do, everything that you have done. The other day I was having this thought, just to kind of tie it back to the AI thing. Like I was having this thought of, I don't have a bike right now, but I was thinking maybe I'm going to get a bike this summer. And I'm not one to like, I've never owned a bike helmet any of the times I've had a bike. And I thought to myself, you know what? If I get a bike this summer, I'm definitely going to get a bike helmet. And the reason for that is less of like the safety issue and less of the, like, I don't want to get a ticket by the police issue, but it's more so just from the vantage point of like, I don't want to run the risk of potentially suffering a head injury, which would result in me witnessing what is to come in the next 5 years with this whole AI thing. And I can say the exact same thing about wanting to be around and wanting to be able to witness the things that you continue to do while you are here. So thank you so, so much for taking time out of your schedule.
Actually, just on that, I'm thrilled to hear you say that. And could I just ask you and our listeners to help me with one thing that will absolutely guarantee that?
Yes.
We have just launched our first ever Make Love Not Porn equity crowdfunding campaign on WeFunder. And it's our first ever because historically, in line with everything else I've shared with you, no other crowdfunding platform would accept us. You know, the no adult content thing just applied across the board. In this case, the lead investor in this campaign is the wonderful Jameela Jamil, the actress from The Good Place, She-Hulk. You know, yeah. She has a community called Ai Wei, and she interviewed me for her Ai Wei podcast a while back. Loves Make Love Not Porn, is a huge fan, wants to encourage her community to fund female founders. And so she got WeFunder to embrace us. Mm. And so just a few weeks back, we launched our campaign, and this is an equity crowdfunding campaign. You know, you are investing in Make Love Not Porn. The minimum investment is $100. So hopefully it's pretty accessible for, you know, a lot of people. And, you know, I would love to ask our listeners and you to spread the word, you know, if you like what I'm doing with Make Love Not Porn, if you too would like to see it grow into the future in all the ways that I want to make happen, please do go to wefunder.com/makelovenotporn and do invest at whatever level you can. And I would be so grateful.
And I'm so glad you brought that up because, I mean, firstly, yes, of course, like going to do it immediately. That link will be in the show notes of this episode. But also just to throw this out there to folks, you know, to invest in a company, it's typically not an accessible thing for most people. And these sort of like crowdsourced company funding platforms that exist are an incredible way for you to have a very like easy entry point to investment and putting your money behind companies that matter, that you believe in. And, you know, that's one of the, I'm not a big investment guy, but you know, my business partner is. And one of the things that I've learned from him is like, if you believe in it, if you really believe in it, it's likely to be a good investment. And Cindy, you are a perfect example of this. Like, this is an example of something that we believe in. And so absolutely. I'm so glad that you shared that. How else can people find you, find your work? The Substack will also be in our show notes, but how else can people stay up to date with the work that you're doing?
Sure. So, I'm on Twitter and Instagram, I'm at Cindy Gallup, and we are at Make Love Not Porn. You can follow me on LinkedIn, and you can follow me on Facebook as well. And obviously, I would love to exhort our audience to go to makelovenotporn.tv, do sign up and subscribe. You know, subscriptions start at $10 a month, so eminently affordable. And do consider becoming a Make Love Not Porn star.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. This is going to be the highlight of my year. So thank you so much, Cindy. This has been a real, real treat. Thank you for taking time out of your schedule to sit down and chat with us.
It's been an absolute pleasure. And I'm so going back to your first ever episode about Make Love Not Porn and listening to it. You bet.
Okay. As long as you promise to just understand, it was our very first episode. So just keep that in mind. Totally. Thank you, Cindy. I can't thank you enough. This was so sweet.
It's been a pleasure.
All right, there we have it, folks. Hope you enjoyed that conversation that we just had. And thanks for listening to the podcast. If you want to support the podcast further, you can do that by leaving a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, or you can simply rate the podcast on the Spotify mobile app. And if you want to support the podcast even further than that, which you can.
Wow. You can go to so kind and thoughtful and so generous. Thoughtful,
so generous. Go to patreon.com/turnmeon. To become a patron and help us keep this podcast afloat.
Well, if you want to reach out to us, turnmeonpodcast@gmail.com is always open for all of your messages. That's the best way to get in touch. If you have a question for us, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, if you have a recommendation for a guest on the show, or if you just want to send us a little love note, email, money transfer, all of that.
Sex toy.
You know, we're our email inbox is open to you.
That is it for this week. Until next week.
Why don't you go touch yourself?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.